Welcome to the Northern Affinity Video Podcast. During this session, we will be having an unedited discussion with an expert. And what I'll be planning to do is, during our discussion, get them to teach me something. Teach me about something that's of interest, but also they are an expert in. I'm Michael Edwards, and I'm the founder of the Northern Affinity. And I will tap into our wonderful community to bring you along on my drive for self-improvement and my desire to learn. So please connect with me on various social media platforms, whether it's LinkedIn or Instagram or Twitter. And I'd love to hear from you what subjects you'd like to learn more about, or what subjects you think it'd be good for me to learn about. So please, you know, get in contact and let me know. All the details will be in the show notes, and you can send me an email or contact me by the various platforms. I really hope you enjoy the show. So I'm delighted to say that on the latest episode, I am joined by Anita Pickersgill. So welcome, Anita.
Hello.
So good to see you. Today, we're going to talk all about invoicing and, well, more accurately, getting your invoicing right. So before we do that, Anita, just kind of give us a bit of background into you and what you do, and then we can kind of frame the conversation from there.
Background into me, I think actually I bang the drum that loudly, I think everybody sees me. I am a credit management specialist. A debt collector is the common name for what people know me as and what people see me as, but that is built up from a long number of years in commercial finance, insolvency, and normal B2B business, with a constant theme being in the sales ledger and accounts and cash flow credit management side. So I left school with not a lot. I've learned a heck of a lot since. And now I'm giving it back. And I'm wanting small businesses to be in a better place, because it's often overlooked, and it's one of the biggest reasons that things go wrong.
No, so that's absolutely. So I guess the kind of obvious question is, why? Why do we have this conversation? Why is it so important to get this right?
Well, I can only go from my experience on why, but I think a lot of it boils down to that when people start out in business, they often invest a heck of a lot of personal emotion into it and finance. Now, some of that could be grant funding, but startups find it hard to find grant funding. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's usually redundancy pay, equity release, and inheritance. And that is a really important thing to register, because when you start out, you can go to local councils and they have support hubs and things like the Adventure Programme that lasts for so many years. But most of those cover what I would call the sexy stuff. The sales are really important, the website, the pricing, all the fundamental, you know, you've got to make sales, and everybody knows that. But behind that, there is this underpinning of a process that runs alongside that sales process, whether you give credit or not, because card payments can be reclaimed. And I think it's because it isn't in that startup toolkit that it's not paid attention to. But we all know you put all the hours in, and there are quite a lot of people give up and go get a job because, you know, they're not getting a regular wage out of the business. The sales might not be what they hope they would be. And they can look at all the mechanisms, and they'll look at adjusting the pricing and aiming the right market. But this is something that I think now the government has shifted into including more, because the Small Business Commissioner has been created and it's been there a while now, and the website is so much better now than it was when it first came out. And that's there free. That's a free resource for any small business. But as usual, there isn't much promotion about it being there. So for small businesses to know where to go for help is often the problem. because the signposts are not there. It's not like driving a car and you can just put your sat nav on and it takes you to where you know. So how do you know you've got a problem unless the problem presents itself? And I think that's what I do. I help businesses put this process in place so they're preventing the problem from presenting itself in many ways. And it is something that's relatively simple to start the process. It is one of the most common that I get on my desk, incorrect invoicing. It really is.
I can imagine. So, you know, and you kind of point you touched on there about businesses, essentially business failure. Well, you know, we all know actually most businesses is not due to not being profitable. It's cash flow. Simple as that. That is the biggest reason for failure for business, isn't it? And that's where, and this kind of
It's a massive part of it. They've moved the stats around recently. Cash flow was sort of number two in the hit parade. Now it's currently at number one. And a lot of the other reasons that are in there can all sort of be indirectly linked to it anyway. So It is a massive foundation stone. And if you think that the government now says that even if you don't have terms and conditions, that your customers should pay you on a standard 30 day anyway. But if you've got suppliers that have got you on rigid 30 days, but your cash is not coming in before the money's going out, then you're always going to have that drought in the middle of your cash flow where you are fending people off. And as you get bigger, that gap becomes bigger. So if you don't catch it in time, you end up with this sort of spell of pulling your hair out and frantically thinking, how do I do this? And we're not very good in this country, really, at asking for help. It's especially where finance is concerned. It's like, we don't do that. You know, it's too personal. But yes, it is personal, but it's incredibly important. And I think, you know, they don't teach it at school ordinarily. And maybe, you know, we need to peel it back and actually start getting a bit more savvy from when we're kids, really, so that it becomes part of the norm to talk about it.
Yeah, it's very non-British, isn't it? We don't want to be talking about money. It's kind of almost, it's almost vulgar to be talking about money. We're not allowed to do that.
Well, exactly. And failure as well. I mean, if you take someone like America, failure is almost like a badge of honour over there. You fall over, you start again, you get up, you learn from it, you move on. And really, I think part of that attitude needs to be a little bit more of we've got here, in that we make it a learning exercise. And, you know, we have that, you know, dust yourself off attitude and start all over again. But somehow, you know, if you are the director of a business that goes insolvent or a sole trader that goes bankrupt, you're automatically, you've done it on purpose. You must have done. And yet, I don't know many people in all my years who would deliberately put themselves in that position to be judged in that way. So I think it's really important that we do start owning it better.
Absolutely. So to get to the main point of this discussion about getting your invoicing right, you know, where does someone start with that? You know, whether they're a new startup business today or they've been going 10 years, you know, what kind of things do they need to do or need to make sure they're getting right?
I think the important thing is to remember that people actually do need an invoice. The invoice is the document that enables most payments. Now, whether that's a receipted invoice because you may be taking a card payment and actually sending the invoice as a receipt, most people will ask for an invoice for their expenses or as proof of payment. And therefore, you have to think, well, is it good enough to just cobble that together? Some people still use Excel for an invoice. Some people just draft it up in a duplicate, but we still have people doing manual invoicing now, despite the massive push to move online and digital, and to recognise that there are some really cheap packages there from a fiver a month with literally hundreds of invoice templates that you can choose from. And you can have that template there ready-made, and you'd think it was relatively easy to just fill in the blanks, because you'd think that template must have all the points. And it's on the government website. If you Google, what should I have on my invoice? It actually comes up on the government website and tells you step by step what you should have on there. Again, but I'm telling you about that now, but where is that in your startup kit when you're starting out in business? It isn't there, so you wouldn't know to go look. And the danger is that Xero, QuickBooks, Sage, and any one of those platforms where you can link it up and it does wonderful things with your accounts and it has the invoice templates in, the templates are compliant, but what you put into the boxes and how you do it really matters. And that's where I think people who are solopreneurs don't necessarily think, because many of the times they're dealing on quite a personal level, or they're dealing online and they are doing that. The payment is almost taken straight away, so they don't think about these things because the money's actually turning. So once they've been paid, it almost becomes a forgotten exercise. And some of them becomes more when you get bigger and you then do start shifting onto credit terms. People start asking for credit terms. And specifically looking at, is everything on that invoice that your customer needs? And funnily enough, a unique identification number, number one in the hit parade. Xero automatically generates the number, so you're fine. So do all the others. So you don't have to worry about that unless you're doing it manually or on a spreadsheet. But then if you're a sole trader, it becomes even more of an issue, because sole traders are different to limited companies. And they must include their name and their business name. So if it's John Smith trading as Smith's Builders, both of those have to be on there, not just John Smith and not just Smith's Builders. It has to be the full legal name of the business and themselves. And also an address. Now, if you're a sole trader or a micro business trading from your home address, I'm not sure a lot of people want to put their home address on the invoice. But the government stipulates you have to have an address on there, which then, in many cases, that already disables an invoice because sole traders don't put their home address on there. But in many cases, they don't really already have an accountant because they've started off small. So what address can they put on there other than the business address? And that's where it becomes quite a brave thing to do, to put your address on there. But unfortunately, you do need to have one on there for legal reasons, so that people can actually serve legal documents on you, even though you would think in this day and age that emails would be accepted for that. But they're not in every case.
Okay. So
that's a massive issue in itself. And then the good old unique tax reference number that we all have to get now that we have to file online and do our accounts online. And 2023 is another year for us all probably having to pay HMRC monthly. So that's another adjustment to make. But the UTR number also needs to be showing, not mandatorily. They don't direct it has to be, but they recommend it should be, because it's a way of verifying who you are, because it's your unique number. And then it gets even worse, because if you are working in subcontracting with the construction industry, for instance, you then have to work out whether you can charge VAT on your invoice, or even if you should, because of the reverse charge VAT status within that industry. And if CIS is applicable, you then have to account for that. So you can see already with sole traders, there's already four tripwires there that could easily be fallen over. And that's before you even get your invoice out to your customer. But you get those on there. You've covered your compliance. So ideally, I suppose the thing is to make sure that you at least get a bookkeeper or someone where you can use their address perhaps as a communication address. And that's sole traders on their own. Limited companies, there's more points on there, but most of them mull over. So we've covered the unique reference number that everybody has to have. The company name and address and contact information is much better because limited companies normally will have an accountant or a PO box, so they're not putting their personal address on there. A clear description of what you're charging for is often where people fall down. And you can imagine the scenario. This happens quite a lot when you're providing a service on a regular basis per month. And it could be websites, social media, where there's quite a number of things that are included within that service. But you will put July billing.
Yeah.
So later, when someone's disputing that, and a judge is asking you what actual work was done in July, or that customer comes back to say, well, what did you actually do in July? Because I wasn't here, or I don't know. Yeah. You then have to go to the effort of trawling through all that and reproducing it. So the more detail you can give in that description box minimizes disputes, minimizes court claims, and it almost shuts the door on anybody using it as a valid reason to string out paying. So it is really important in there to be as thorough as you can with that. And the other thing is there's a difference between the date you do the invoice and the date you supplied the service and the goods. So if you delivered in on the 5th of the month, but you didn't invoice until the 10th, then you need to be stating that the supply date was the 5th of the month. Right. Because that also helps people process the invoice. It serves as a memory prompt. So when people might be looking for matching documents later on, that they need to be looking on the 5th and not the 10th. And if it's a bigger business that has lots and lots of invoices to process, you can imagine that person, if they haven't got the information just at their fingertips that they can see really quickly, guess where your invoice is going to go?
Yeah, bottom of the pile.
Exactly, and it's going to stay there until either you can provide the information or they get fed up of being henpecked to deal with it. And it really is important, is that, because those are some of the top reasons why things come to me in a disputed state, purely because of those two things. The date of the invoice is really important, obviously, for tax reasons, especially if it's a VAT invoice. And obviously your VAT number needs to be on there. But you'd be surprised how many people forget to total it up. And they leave it with zero VAT.
Right.
Because they've not changed the settings to reflect the VAT. And that comes from setting the system up. So those little things on their own, plus now since the lockdown, and since we've had this massive shift online, it's almost like we communicate with email addresses. So when we send an invoice, and you might have even received them yourself, where it says to, and then it has an email address.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the business name. It doesn't have the address. So not only do you have to make sure that the business address or the sole trader address is on the invoice, but also the customer address in its correct format. So if you are sending it to an email address, then later down the line, you can't sue an email address. And even if you could, is John at John Smith Builders actually liable, or is John at John Smith Builders an employee of John?
Right.
And that is a whole new ballgame completely. So it's easy to see why something as simple as getting your invoice matters. And that's just getting the format of it right, getting the timing on, timing of when you send it is another story completely, but that matters as well. Because if you know your customers pay at the end of every month, then if you send your invoices out at the first of the month, they're not going to pay you till the very end of that month, are they? No. So that invoice is going to sit on your aged debt for 30 days before they even look at paying it. So yeah, if your debt turn matters, send it out nearer to the end of the month. And then chances are, if you know your customer and you find out from the 15th of the month onwards, the chances are you'll get it caught on that month end run and get paid that bit quicker. So I think
one thing to say, obviously, Anita, from what you're saying there is, you know, the don't forget the details, basically. Get things right, get things in place, because it's not just a case of sending it over with £500 for the invoice, you know, getting it everything right and spending that little, might be an extra 2 or 3 minutes, it shouldn't be too long. Getting it right could make a massive difference.
It makes a huge difference, and it also means that from a compliance point of view, you're already compliant, and it comes across as more, shall I say, I hate the word professional in many ways, but it does add that extra layer of credibility if people are taking the time to do it properly, because then at the other end, you know, you haven't got that accounts.
Yeah, so I guess the other thing I was going to mention is, how often do you hear people saying words to the effect of, don't worry, I know my customers, they always pay me absolutely fine, it'll never happen to me, that type of thing when it comes to invoicing and credit?
Too often is a good word. Way too often. Usually because, as I alluded to previously, we're great at asking for help when we're already in pain. And it's a bit like a house insurance. If your mortgage provider says you've got to have it, or driving your car needs insurance, you can't drive it because you get a whacking fine, you will go get that insurance. Uh-huh. Because it's directed that you need it. With credit, there's a massive misunderstanding that it actually means you have to give credit. But credit is also about receiving credit and understanding that debit cards claim backs. And the more options you give a customer to pay, because now there's a whole range of methods to make payment, and you don't know which ones your customer prefers to use. They may want to do a bank transfer. If your bank details are not on your invoice, then that's going to get shoved to the bottom of you. They may prefer to pay by continuous payment authority, but you might not have that facility. So, yes, as your business grows, and even when you're small, bad habits are easily put into a business, but they're very hard to get out.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Anita. I think that's really, really important advice you're giving there. And I think, you know, it's important for us all to get this right, and kind of made me think I need to a little evaluate mine, just checking everything's in place. So thank you for that, if nothing else. If anyone wants to kind of find out more about what you do or contact you and need to chat about invoicing, credit, all that kind of stuff, where's the best places to find you?
I'd say the best, but you can find me obviously in the Knowledge Affinity, but LinkedIn, definitely LinkedIn. I'm very strong on LinkedIn, not so much Facebook, and obviously Thornbury Collections as well. The head office is down in Wales, and I'm up in sunny, or not very sunny, Huddersfield today. Very wet and miserable, actually. But, so I'm easily contactable. And it never costs anything just to have that quick conversation to sort of say, can you just give me 20 minutes to see, you know, if I've got any massive problems that are about to hit me in the face here.
Yeah.
And there's always room for improvement in many things, but people are often scared, understandably so, of the cost of things. You know, if they can't see an immediate benefit, is it worth the cost? Well, I always say to someone, if you had a bad debt now, even of $2,000 in your business, what would be the cost to your business truly of that? How many bills could you not pay because of that? And that's the other way of looking at it. Because if you don't get the credit process right, then it's your customers are likely to take longer to pay. You're going to have more disputes. And nobody really wants bad debts. And now, more so than ever, with the cost of living, the cost of being in business, and there's still a lot of opportunity out there. And maybe now is a good time in many ways, not just in credit, but for people to give the business that MOT. You do it to your car, so why not your business?
Absolutely. And I think that's a great message to finish on. So thank you very much, Anita. I think that's been really helpful. I'm sure a lot of people got a lot from that. So thank you.
It's a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this chat today. And like me, you learned something new from our wonderful expert. So if you'd like to hear from more of our sessions, please subscribe on whatever platform that you get your podcast from to hear more. And also, we'd love to meet you at some point at one of our upcoming events. We, the Northern Affinity, hold events all across the north of England. And we'd love to meet new people and have guests along. So please come along and check out our website or all the details in the show notes. Thank you very much for listening, and see you next time.